ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to another edition of Liberty Unbridled. I am your host, Ken Molman, and we're here every week at 7 p.m. Eastern Time on Sunday nights to bring you issues of liberty throughout Kentucky and the U.S. and the world. We're here courtesy of the My View Matters Radio Network, and we thank them for the time, as always. And this week we're going to touch on the bombing that happened, or not the bombing, the shooting that happened just over a week ago, and talk about gun control, talk about mental health, and then after we're done with that, we're going to shift off to some financial issues. Beshear specifically has now come out and said that they need more tax revenue at the state, and if we get time, we'll hit the fiscal cliff stuff as well. If you'd like to call in about any of these topics, you can do so by calling area code 858-683-1326. Again, 858-683-1326. So unless you have literally lived in a cave and haven't turned on a computer or turned on a TV or done anything, everybody is now familiar with the incident that happened about a week ago, just over a week ago, where a 20-year-old or so walked into a school and started shooting and killed six adults and 20 children. And he had also previously killed his mother prior to coming to the school and doing all of that. And, you know, it's brought up a number of political issues. Of course, those that are rabid gun control folks jumped in the fray right away and started talking about gun control and started talking about trying to reinstitute the assault weapons ban that had originally been implemented in the Clinton era and had expired some years ago now. And some are calling for more as well. And so I wanted to tackle this issue because all we're hearing is bumper sticker slogans, and we're hearing a lot of emotional arguments, but we're not hearing logical arguments. And, you know, logic and reason trying to divorce yourself from what is a very emotional incident. But you have to be able to divorce yourself from it, look at the facts, and really be able to determine what is the best course of action, what is something that can be done, if anything can be done at all. And then you have to balance that against how extreme are you willing to go to solve a problem, and does it create other problems? Does it interfere with the rights of individuals to do other things? And really, you know, it's one of those things, does one bad apple, you know, mean that we all have to change our lives because of one person? So, you know, there's been a lot of talk, first off, about reinstituting the assault weapons ban. And the assault weapons ban covered a number of firearms, most of which were automatic firearms. It created the waiting period to purchase any firearm. There were a number of things that the assault weapons ban did. And while many thought, oh, well, that sounds good, a waiting period, yeah, that way crimes of passion, it'll curb crimes of passion. But what we saw with the L.A. riots, boy, that's been over a decade ago, was that store owners and just everyday citizens who were looking to buy a firearm to protect themselves against people who were rioting and looting and beating anybody up that they saw, those folks were unable to purchase a firearm to defend themselves in an emergency situation. People that don't normally, you know, wouldn't normally have a firearm suddenly saw, wow, I should have a firearm to defend myself, and were unable to obtain the ability to defend themselves. And so that was one of the critical failings of the previous firearms bill. The waiting period sounds great on paper, but when a real emergency occurs and chaos ensues, you know, the waiting period was by no means helpful to those who were just looking to protect themselves, their family, and their stuff. Additionally, you know, the reality is that a gun is a gun is a gun. And, yeah, an automatic can put out more rounds per minute, but unless you're trained, and most of these atrocities that occur with firearms are not usually with people that are trained. They're people who are crazy people. You know, an automatic weapon takes some practice, takes some skill to be able to repeatedly hit a target or multiple targets without having to re-aim or anything to that effect. So as one who has shot automatic weapons, I know that, yeah, it's great to be able to push out 30 rounds and put 30 holes in a, you know, small target, but it's really not any real difference between semi-auto, auto, and really for that matter, you know, just regular old single shot. You know, if you're going to put a hole in something, you're going to put a hole in something. And, you know, it's just really unfortunate that bad people do bad things. And so I wanted to talk about some of these issues surrounding this. So the first issue really is, would gun control really work? If we instituted gun control, would all gun violence go away? And the answer is no. There is, in other countries that have instituted complete firearms bans, what we've seen is that the bad guys keep their guns because that's part of being a bad guy is you don't follow the law. And so what you're doing, in a sense, is taking firearms away from law-abiding citizens and giving them and keeping them only in the hands of those who are the bad guys. By contrast, you know, we've seen over the past 15 or so years a dramatic rise in the number of states that have concealed carry laws. And many of those who were in favor of gun bans and gun control screamed bloody murder over the passage of these concealed carry laws. But what we've seen as a real practical reality of these laws is that it's empowered people to protect themselves, and it has driven down people as far as becoming victims. It's driven those numbers down because people are able to defend themselves. And while my more hardcore libertarian and gun rights folks disagree with this, the fact that you do have to go to the course and you have to get a little bit of training on proper use, maintenance, and aiming, and as well as guidelines on the use of a concealed carry weapon, really enhances the ability of those who do get the license and do go through that process to be effective at defending themselves and without taking and causing more innocent victims in surrounding areas. I think that it's very reasonable to disallow firearms in a bar. I think that that makes sense. You know, when people get inebriated, they do stupid things, they say stupid things, and it's not a good thing to have people in an improper state of mind with a firearm. And that kind of leads to where we're going here, that, you know, the person that did this shooting was not in the right state of mind, and it wasn't due to some sort of intoxication. It was because they were mentally ill. And, you know, mental illness is a very difficult thing. There are different degrees of mental illness. There are different symptoms of the different types of mental illness, and there are different reactions from people who are afflicted with different types of mental illness to different situations. And we'll get back into the mental illness side here in a moment, but you know, the reality is that if somebody is set on hurting someone, they will find a way to do it. You know, even in a bar where there are no firearms, if somebody wants to hurt somebody, then they're going to, you know, there's been incidents where people bust beer bottles and use them as knives. You know, obviously the Oklahoma City bombing didn't take any firearms. 9/11 didn't take any firearms. And in fact, the worst massacre of school children ever happened in 1927. It was actually a school board treasurer bombed a school, and he did so because he was upset that the school board voted to raise taxes. And the victims, the majority of the victims were ages 7 to 14. You got to be sick in the head. There's no normal person that targets a child. I mean, children are innocent. They have no means or understanding of what is going on. And to target someone who is innocent is sick. And that's really what it comes down to. You know, as a parent, I can't even imagine how these parents feel. I mean, it's horrible to see some crazy person come into a school and just gun down 20 kids. They were all 6 and 7 years old. I mean, what did the 6 and 7 year old do to deserve that? Absolutely nothing. They couldn't have. And we've heard some of the stories about the teacher, one of the teachers that was gunned down that protected her kids. They actually apparently had a lockdown procedure at this school. And the teacher put all the kids in the storage closets and stuff and hit them. And when the gunman came in and asked where the kids were, she told the gunman that the kids were in the gymnasium, in the gym. And he killed her and then moved on. But she saved all the kids in her class by doing that. Obviously, that lockdown plan was not adequate for this scenario. I mean, we see the outcome, 20 dead kids, 6 dead adults. That plan was not adequate. And so we've seen a lot of people try to call for further measures. Some are calling for reinstituting the assault weapons ban. Well, the problem with that is that the weapons that were used in this scenario were not covered under the assault weapons ban. During the assault weapons ban, during that period, AR-15s became very, very popular, and that's what was used in this, an AR-15. It is the non-automatic version, or it's a semi-automatic version of the M16, which is an automatic weapon. What that means is that, you know, with every trigger pull on an AR-15, one trigger pull, one round. And then, you know, the reason it is semi-automatic is that there is no other work required to re-cock and have the firearm ready to go again. You just pull the trigger again and you go again. But it's one bullet per trigger pull. By contrast, a true automatic weapon is you pull the trigger, and until you let go or until the gun runs out of bullets, it just keeps firing rounds. And so that's the difference. And under the assault weapons ban from the 90s, only automatic weapons were covered. There were some other weird arbitrary things, like making modifications to semi-automatics. You could not – there were three things – there were a list of things, but if your firearm met three of the list, then it was also considered part of or controlled by the assault weapons ban. And those three things, I can't remember them all. I remember one scenario where it was a bayonet, I think it was the bayonet lug, not just the bayonet, but the lug itself to put the bayonet on, putting in a clip or a magazine. There's been a lot of debate over clip and magazine, and some of the gun folks get real mad when you call it a clip. Whatever. We're not going to get into semantics here. The point is clip or magazine. And then also, I can't remember what the third thing was on this particular firearm, but whether it was replacing the gas chamber or replacing or putting a scope on it or something, I can't remember now. But just different things. There were a list of items that if the gun were modified in certain ways, then it would fall under that, you know, that act as well. And there was also the waiting period. Now, it's funny because at the time, during this era, I actually worked at a sporting goods store and I was selling guns. And what's even funnier is I wasn't even legal to own a gun. I wasn't old enough to own a firearm to purchase one. But there was no age restriction on selling them. So at 17 years old, I was selling handguns and rifles and everything else. And I used to do the Brady paperwork. And there was different paperwork for handguns. So there was the normal waiting period. And then there was also the handgun paperwork, which was additional. And, you know, the reality is, as far as I saw, it really didn't change darn thing. And that's really what it comes down to. You know, again, sick people are going to do sick things and they'll find sick ways to do them. And the NRA spoke out. Now, I'm not the biggest fan of the NRA. I think that most of the time they're overly political and willing to sell people down the river. One of the things they came out with was talking about putting armed people in the schools, school resource officers, basically off-duty police officers, which many public schools already have, a school resource officer of some sort. I know that Campbell County High School, for instance, has an SRO. I knew one that passed away a few years ago, is a really super nice guy. But obviously, as a police officer, he should be allowed to carry a firearm into the school, even when working for the school as the SRO, not as a police officer. That's common sense. And in fact, I heard, you know, in all this week, there's a Texas school board that had voted to allow teachers to carry, so long as they had gone through the plan, the normal procedure to obtain a carry permit. But then they also had additional things that they would require. So basically the school board had to approve people for being able to carry. And I heard a radio interview with this guy. Essentially what he did was made it so that you had, or the board had done this, so that you, if you had your concealed carry permit, you applied to the school board and the school board approved it, then you were allowed to carry concealed only. You could not open carry, but you could carry concealed only. And you could not ever, ever take your firearm off during the school day or on school premises. So it's there, and it's there only for protection. And in part of that is making sure that no one who is unauthorized to use the weapon had the opportunity to do so. And that's why it had to remain on you at all times. I think that's definitely, I don't want to say a Band-Aid, but it's taking care of the symptom, if you will, or helping to take care of the symptom, eliminating a soft target, if you will, making it so that people who may be considering such things would be in a position to reconsider, because their plot isn't going to work, because they don't know who is carrying in the school and who's not. They don't know, you know, part of all of this, and there's been a lot of talk about this too, and I don't know how much stock I really place in this theory, but one of the things that's been talked about is a question of, are these people that are doing this, are they doing it for their own aggrandizement? Are they doing it to make a statement before, you know, taking their own life or whatever? Are they doing it to get their name in the news, the media, whatever? Is that the motivation? I can't see that. I mean, again, I'm not mentally ill, and I don't know a whole lot of mentally ill folks, but maybe mental illness drives people to do that, but that doesn't seem logical. Of course, then again, maybe the whole mental illness part. But if that is your goal, if your goal is to go and kill as many people, shock value, get your name in the news, that, you know, having people at the school who will stop you one way or another before you can really do a whole lot. That may be a mechanism to help curtail the number of incidents that occur. Now, one of the articles I found when doing research and trying to really, you know, get my full understanding of what's going on here, and there's still details that we don't know, and there's still information we don't know, and we may never know, because the reality is that as horrific as this event was, most of this, the media has sensationalized it and tried to make it just a, you know, ratings boost. The politicians have made it a political thing and tried to make it a political ploy. Nobody's really talking about how do we solve this problem, how do we look into what caused this and how to prevent it in the future. So I don't know that we're ever really going to get there. But I did find a good article called The 10 Myths about the Connecticut shootings, and really it's more about school shootings in general. And so they mentioned basically one of the key things is that these stories that are out there about these types of events contain wildly inaccurate information. And so they put 10 things out here about it is specific to what's been said about this story, but it's more the general things that people are saying that they wanted to refute. So the first thing they list here is that school shootings are a regular occurrence. And they go on to explain that essentially the rate of homicides at a primary school, that the rate is actually higher in the UK than it is here in America. And the UK has had gun control for many years. And the point here is to say that they're not really that regular an occurrence at all. It's not something that happens all the time. You know, I don't even know how many thousands of schools there are in the country. It's probably tens of thousands of schools in the country. And, you know, this isn't happening every day, and this isn't happening every year. These are rare occurrences, really, and as tragic as they are, it's not something that happens all the time. You know, number two here, gun controls would have prevented such killings. They went into basically a lot of the things that I talked about before about how this isn't, if not, the weapons themselves would not have been covered under the previous gun control laws. Then number three, people kill people, but supposedly the claim is people kill people, but guns are much more efficient at killing. They go into some of the details on the massacre that happened in 1927 when the school board treasurer bombed that school, which was horrible. They also go into an event in Germany where a crazy 42-year-old schizophrenic went into a school, killed 8 kids and 2 teachers with a homemade flamethrower, a lance, and a mace. And again, they emphasize that only crazy people can, you know, go kill kids. They say that, you know, number four is that the killings speak of a malaise particular to the U.S., and they go through a list of things that have happened in other countries and whatever. I don't think that really matters all that much. Number five, more guns mean more gun deaths. Again, they show that, and actually they point out here that as gun ownership has risen, the number of homicides has fallen. The rate of homicide, I should say, has fallen. So that's not really necessarily a correct equation there. More guns does not mean more gun deaths. Number six here, the Second Amendment is outdated and meant to be something totally different. Now, I'm just going to skip over his little thing here, even though it's kind of in tune. There's a number of folks. Piers Morgan is probably the one that's being most quoted right now. saying that the Second Amendment was devised with muskets in mind, not high-powered handguns and assault rifles. And that's absolutely not the case. The British considered our rifled long guns as assault weapons. It's actually funny, one of the responses that I saw to Piers Morgan's comments was, no, the Second Amendment was devised with the Brits in mind. But because Piers Morgan's British. But the point is that if you go back and read the founding documents and you look at the thoughts and the writings of the founding fathers, you look at the reason for the American Revolution, which was in part due to gun control. If you go back and look at what everyone believed was the inherent right of those to carry and defend themselves against other people and against their government, they absolutely did have that in mind, that people should be able to defend themselves, and that is a big part of it. Also, and this is a slight tangent here, I had a story up earlier today, and I don't have it here now, but there was a court case from either the 80s or 90s, I forget which. Actually, it may have been the 2000s now that I think about it, where the U.S. Supreme Court has said that the government has no responsibility to provide individual protection to anyone. Again, the government has no responsibility to provide for your individual protection. And as part of that ruling, they actually say that you, the individual, have the responsibility to protect yourself. And that is why we have the Second Amendment. I mean, it carries through all the way through today. The idea that government could have a one-to-one police officer-to-person ratio or police officer-to-family ratio to protect individuals from other individuals, there wouldn't be enough money for anything else. They'd have to take your entire income to pay that guy to protect you. It can't be reasonably done. You have to be responsible for your own protection. Number seven, Americans are increasingly arming themselves. I don't know why that really matters, but it says, I don't know. I guess the point is that I don't even understand that point. We are buying guns, okay, so what? Guns have no valid purpose in society. Well, and they go into a philosophical thing about who determines the use of a possession, and it goes through, and again, going back to individual responsibility, and they bring up a emotionally charged, intentionally so, argument that African Americans should have been more willing to give up weapons when forced to, when Southern whites in the 19th and 20th centuries decided to oppress them. And so the point is that they do have a valid purpose in society. They have, again, a purpose to protect you, the individual. You, the individual, protect yourself and or your family and stuff from those who would take your life or your stuff or your family away from you. And that is the legitimate reason for the individual protecting themselves. And then there's been talk about the gun lobby being too powerful. And they go into how the NRA is not really that great. And, yeah, of course, they're not. The NRA has been willing to sell people down the river to protect what they interpret the Second Amendment to be, which is primarily about hunting. And, in fact, in this most recent event, one of the things that they tried to push it off on, they basically tried to shift the blame to the First Amendment, saying that, well, it's all these violent video games that are causing this to happen. No, it's not. Absolutely not. The video games, how many tens, hundreds of thousands of people, millions of people play those video games? You don't see a bunch of crazy people running around shooting people. People understand the difference between video games and reality. Those that don't have issues, again, and you know, whether those issues would manifest because they couldn't tell the difference between a video game and reality, or a book and reality, or TV and reality. That's a mental issue, no matter what. And those need to be addressed as mental issues. So I see we're at the bottom of the hour. And when we get back from the break here, I'm going to take a break. And when we get back, I'm going to talk about mental health. We'll talk about Governor Beshear's plan for raising taxes and some pension reform stuff. If we get to it, we'll get to fiscal cliff stuff. And, of course, your calls are always welcome as well. If you'd like to call in now during the break, the number here is area code 858-683-1326. And so in a little bit of a break from what I usually play, last night the guitarist for the band Ministry, he was in a few other bands as well, passed away on stage. And so I thought I would play a song from Ministry. So I apologize for those of you that aren't into this type of music. Bear with me for the next 5 minutes or so, and when we get back, we'll tackle all these issues and your phone calls, and we'll be right back on the My View Matters Radio Network. right, and we're back. It is Sunday night. This is the My View Matters Radio Network, and during the break, we got a caller call in just with a comment that he blames the media for somewhat immortalizing these folks, that they're giving them media, and you know that these people aren't people that are out curing cancer. They're not out finding solutions to real problems. They want to make a name for themselves in some grandiose way. And that's, you know, stop saying their names. Stop glorifying these people in their own sick, twisted way. And, well, you'll notice that tonight I haven't mentioned his name. And part of that is because I don't know if that's the full culprit, but I certainly think it could be a factor. And that's why I have not said his name, because, you know, it doesn't matter who did it. At the end of the day, you know, the problem is that it happened, and we need to be talking about how it happened, why it happened, and try to figure out how to prevent it, if it's preventable at all in the future. So I agree with the sentiment. I think the media is sensationalizing this. I mean, they're definitely getting their pound of flesh out of this story and making sure that the 24-hour news cycle folks have something to talk about, because, boy, they really – we're always looking about for something. But before we get off too far, I do need to do the business here at the bottom of the hour. I always do the business. So if you'd like to advertise on this or any of the other My View Matters Radio Network shows, and there are five nights a week we're here, Sunday through Thursday at 7 p.m., you can do so by emailing myviewmatters, all one word, at AOL.com. And the rates are very reasonable, and it helps keep shows like this on the air. And we're always very gracious to the My View Matters Network for keeping us on the air every week so we can come to you. So speaking of what can we do about this, I think that our number one thing that we need to look at is the mental health aspect. As I've said multiple times, and I don't know anybody who would disagree, you've got to be a sick SOB to be able to gun down kids, 6- and 7-year-old kids. There's no rationale, no logic behind such an action, period. I mean, what did a 6-year-old do to you? I mean, really? And obviously this was an indiscriminate thing. He was going in to kill anybody he could. And, you know, prior to that, the guy that shot the Arizona senator or a House rep, excuse me, and the judge, you know, I think that that was an attempt at a suicide by a cop done by somebody who's an idiot and didn't realize that cops weren't going to be there. I think that, you know, again, these are mental health issues. And there's been a lot of discussion amongst rational people, not necessarily in the media, not necessarily by the politicians. But when you talk to folks about this, there's a lot of people saying we need to really evaluate our mental health system and really start trying to figure out what it is that short circuits in these people's brains that makes them go out and try to kill innocent people or people they don't even know. You know, in many ways, the Brady stuff, right, the genesis of the gun ban, the Brady campaign was done, if I remember correctly, it was a guy that was trying to impress Jody Fisher by shooting Reagan. That's not normal behavior at all. No rational, normal person does that. And you know, the reality is that these folks have issues. You know, in this particular case, with the most recent case, the information we have says that the guns were not his guns. It was not the shooter's guns. They were his mother's. Now, his mother was the first victim, right? She was the first one killed by this guy. You know, but what do you do about that? Do you make it so that everyone who's a relative or living with someone who's mentally ill can't own a firearm? And wouldn't that create a negative consequence? Wouldn't it be something where that creates a disincentive for a family to seek help for someone who is mentally ill? Wouldn't it make it so that they wouldn't seek help because they don't want to lose their firearms or whatever rights we're talking about this particular day that are curbed as a result of someone in the household being mentally ill? I really think that the key here is that we need a better mental health care system. You know, unlike other folks and other health care issues, you know, everyone I think that listens or, and if you don't, shouldn't be a huge surprise. I'm someone who smokes, and I'm doing damage to myself each and every time I smoke, and I know that. Unlike that scenario where I, as a smoker, am hurting myself, these folks with mental health issues, generally it's not something that they've done to themselves. It's not something they triggered or caused. These are inherent problems in the body chemistry of these people. And sometimes it's body chemistry. Sometimes it's young trauma. Sometimes it's trauma in their life that's caused these problems. I think I saw a statistic that soldier suicides are at an all-time high right now with PTSD. You know, saw a story about a guy who was doing drones, flying drones around, remote controlling them, and was killing kids with drones and just had a huge breakdown. And, you know, that's the kind of thing that I really think those folks that have either that trauma or have that inherent chemical imbalance, they didn't do anything to get that. It isn't their fault that they're in that scenario. And if there's anyone deserving of help in some way, shape, or form, it's those that are not at fault for their own condition. You know, and in many ways, that's why inherently as human beings, we have those feelings for children, because children are innocent. They couldn't have done anything wrong. There's nothing that children can do to be at fault for what they do. I mean, that's, they're kids. But at the same time, an adult with a mental health issue, it's not their fault. And in many times, they don't know that they have the issue. At times, they don't want help. There's a number of reasons. It's very, very complex, and we can't go into all of them tonight. I couldn't go into them in multiple hour shows. But the reality is we need to have a system that provides assistance for those that need help beyond, you know, it's not their fault what they have. We should be trying to help those folks when we can. And additionally, again, because these firearms that were used in this most recent incident were owned apparently by the mother who was the first victim, we need to put something in place to help the family members of those who are living with those who are mentally ill. And, you know, it probably was a bad idea to have firearms in that house. And well, now through the 2020 hindsight, we know it was a bad idea to have those in that house. But did she know that? Did somebody say, hey, you probably shouldn't have guns in the house? This guy snaps and does crazy stuff. I don't know. But that's the kind of thing that we can do to help the families as well. Help them be able to deal with the mental illness and to help their loved one in trying to treat the mental illness. And we really just need really a new approach to mental health. And we talked about this last week with drug war and all that stuff and how we need to be treating addiction as a mental health issue because usually those are more deep-seated issues that cause that. There are lots of different reasons why we need a good mental health system, because we can help people live better lives. And from an individual basis, that's a good thing. Helping individuals live better lives, live healthy lives, and by their own choice is a great thing. And again, these are people that didn't choose to have a chemical imbalance. They didn't choose to be put into a situation that caused them to suffer some sort of trauma. It happened. And we need to help them the best that we can. They're innocent people. And so I really believe that that's something that we as a society really should, and I know some of my libertarian, hardcore libertarian friends are going to scream bloody murder over this, but I really do believe that if there's any basic role of government as far as interfering in the lives of individuals, it would be in this realm, to help the innocent, to protect the innocent. And that's really, I mean, when it comes down to individuals, you and I, it's our job to protect ourselves. But what about the people that can't protect themselves? That's where the system can be put into place. A system could be there to help those people, to empower them to protect themselves, to empower them to become better people. And to, you know, if you want to take a more nanny state-ish approach and puppeteering approach, make them more productive members of society so they're paying more taxes and blah, blah, blah. That's not what I'm in it for, but you can throw that rationale out there. The point is that there are good reasons to have a good mental health system in place that will help people who need help. And there's going to be people that can't be helped. And it's unfortunate and it's true. I mean, you know, there are people out there that are just so sick in the head that they can't be helped. And this kid may have been one of them. I don't know. Maybe he was, maybe he wasn't. But what I can tell you is that it's better to find that out beforehand. It's better to find out that this dude needs to be locked up before he goes and kills a bunch of kids and teachers or kills a bunch of people randomly on the street or whatever it is. It's better to find that out beforehand than to do something after the fact. Those kids didn't do anything to deserve what happened to them, and neither did the teachers, and that's the point, is that if we had done something to help prevent, it's the ounce of prevention's worth a pound of cure thing. So I think that it would be much better to focus on helping those who can't help themselves as far as mental health and empower those people to help themselves when possible than to clean up the mess afterwards and then have people screaming about taking our rights away because we failed to take care of the problem to begin with. And so I guess that's pretty much all I have to say about that, but it kind of ties in here. Bashir had a big article in the Courier Journal, and of course, this being the hot topic, it came up, and Bashir kind of kicked the can down the road, ironically, based on the rest of the story, and basically said, well, Kentucky, we need to focus on mental health issues, like what he said there, but we need to have a larger gun control debate, but that's at the federal level. Really? No, we don't, but okay, thanks, Steve, for not protecting our gun rights on that front. You know, you could have just said something silly or easy on that, but whatever. But the thrust of the article from Bashir in the Courier Journal was talking more about the taxes and talking about how the state's running low on revenue, and in large part that's because we've been in this prolonged recession, in part because we took out all these loans on having unemployment insurance extended until the cows come home, and now we've got to start paying that back. We've got all these other pension obligations, and the pension's a disaster. Anybody who's looking at the pension stuff, holy cow, what a mess. And we'll see if we can bring somebody on next week. Maybe that'll be a good topic for next week, is to really deep dive into the mess that is our pension system. boy, it's bad. And you know, there are, we've talked about all these taxing entities that are out there, and there's going to attempt to be some action on those because billions of dollars flow through their hands every year. And, you know, the reality is that there's money that's flowing to and through the government. The question is are we getting the best bang for our buck? Is this money that's being used properly, or is it being wasted on garbage? And there are good things the state does with money. I mean, I like it when our roads are good. I always think, you know, and I've said it on the show before, my real premise of the role of government, if nothing else, is basic infrastructure and providing for things that are in a natural monopoly, like roads or electric or phones or, well, old phones, not new phones, traditional, you know, wired phones, electric, things like that, that it's unreasonable to have market competition. You're not going to have 45 power companies stringing wires out in front of your street. You're not going to have 15 sewer companies putting 15 sewer lines in out in front of your house. And you're not going to have 25 water companies putting water lines out in front of your house. that's unreasonable. And so the point is that if the role of government is to provide for the basics, are we doing that in an efficient manner? Are we doing those things the most efficient and most cost-effective way possible? We've talked about early on in the show Thomas Massey story about a bridge that was built in Lewis County and how the state was prepared to pay over $500,000 for this bridge on a back road that services eight people. And he went out and used some of the money that he'd saved in the county and had the same bridge built for less than $50,000. You know, that's a significant savings, and that's one example. That's one anecdote. Is that happening all over the state? If so, isn't that a good place to start looking for where's our money going first? Before we start raising taxes, we really need to be looking at where is the money going? Where is this pit that we're shoveling all this money into? You know, I can't believe that with all the money that's coming in, that we cannot provide the basics for the state. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe there really is just no more money and we've got to raise it, but I don't see it. And until I see, look, here's where we've shown that this can't be any cheaper, this can't be any cheaper, this can't be any cheaper, I can't support raising taxes in any way, shape, or form, especially right now during a recession. When so many people's incomes have not gone up for the past 5-6 years, yet our expenses have gone up. Have you been to the store lately? Have you looked at the price of food? Have you looked at, thankfully this week we got a break on gas temporarily, but gas has been hovering around $4 for the past 2-3 years. Our core costs as an individual or as a family have gone up so much in the past 4, 5, 6 years, I cannot support an additional tax increase. I mean, I don't even begin to think about the people on fixed incomes. I mean, holy cow. When you start talking about raising taxes, that's, you know, the stupid blue panel tax thing that came out that was led by Abramson. You're really going to take away and start taxing people's pensions that weren't taxed before? I mean, really? Because those people are on fixed incomes. Now, I understand, and some of this, you know, is driven by the pension mess, yes. But for the average guy pulling down a pension of $45,000 a year, $50,000 a year, you know, that he worked his years and did his time and got out and expected to be able to live on the rest of it. That was the deal. That was what was made. And right, wrong, or indifferent, that's what this guy's expecting now. And it's no different than if you had a bond from the state of Kentucky. And the bond said, we're going to pay you 1% per year for the rest of your life, right? Well, okay, I'm in. I'm going to buy into that. I'll buy in for, let's say it's 5% per year for the rest of your life, because otherwise at 1% you'd never make your money back. 5% per year for the rest of my life. Okay, I'll invest. And then 5 years in, they go, oh, by the way, you can't take your money out, but we're only going to give you 1% now. Wait, what? That wasn't the deal I bought into. That's not right. And, yeah, we need to look for revenue, but we're not by taking it off the backs of people that are regular folks that had a deal, that bought into a deal and thought they had an agreement. If anybody should lose benefits at all, it should be the legislators and their legislative pension. Let's outlaw that thing. Let's take all the money out of the legislative pension and dump it into all the other pension systems. Because it's the legislators that have robbed, raped, and stolen off of that pension fund for years and years to balance budgets and fund stupid little projects, and then wrote a sweetheart deal for themselves and their pension at the detriment of everybody else. If you're going to take away from a pension, let's take out of that one. But the point is, Beshear wants more taxes. He's unwilling to cut from here and unwilling to cut from here. It's time to talk about raising revenue. And to be fair, they have made some cuts through the years, and that was good. But we're not out of this yet. And I understand that it's hard for the state government to function. It's hard for all of our families to function in this environment. I haven't seen a raise in 6 years. Have you? I mean, okay, great. I've had a cutback too, because all my core costs have gone up. Boo-hoo, government's costs have gone up. Well, yeah, so have mine. I can't just go out and say, hey, employer, you're going to pay me X percent more this year, and you're just going to do it to laugh in my face. The reality is that we need to keep looking for places to cut until the economy turns around. I'm sorry, you're not going to get more tax revenue. You're trying to get blood out of a turnip or blood out of a stone. You can't do it. People out there are already living paycheck to paycheck, barely making it by. You want to start another round of mortgage foreclosures in the state? Great, raise taxes. That'd be the perfect way to do it. Let's start a whole other mess with foreclosures throughout the state, because people that are getting by, just barely getting by, let's just tack another $10 on top, another $10 on top, another $10 on top of what they owe every month. That'll be the quickest way. People will say, it's only $10. It's only $10. Yeah, but it's the $10 that guy's scraping by on. You take that $10 away, now all of a sudden he's out. You know, if he was ahead $9 and you take 10 out, well, now he's down a buck. And he ain't going to make it very long, losing every month, month over month. And we're not really going to get into it as much as we could, or I wanted to, and we can save it for another week. But the fiscal cliff stuff, that's a big part of this too. Government has to be willing to cut, and not cut off of projected growth of 8% year over year and say, oh, we're only going to grow 4% next year. No, there has to be an actual cut. It has to happen. The economy is not growing. What's happening right now is that the federal government is growing faster than the national economy, and that's a bad thing. A government should never grow faster than the people it serves. The mantra I've had for years, the government should never grow faster than the people it serves. Because when it does, it causes a huge negative drain on those people, it's supposed to be serving, to the point where it becomes a disservice. It's taking more from their pocket and obviously not making it so that if the government was operating properly, people would be making more money and they'd get more tax revenue. If they take more out, it's going to stifle the ability for those people to continue to grow their pocketbooks and be able to get things moving again. And oh my gosh, we're out of time. So folks, thanks again for tuning in to another edition of Liberty Unbridled here on the My View Matters Network. Please tune in next week for another hour, 7 p.m. Eastern Time every week right here, and have a good week.